hermeneutic rather than just, you know, just studying all the books of the Bible. So,
you guys have a guy named J.P. Morley, right?
Moreland? Yeah. I haven't been there. I graduated in 2004. But, yeah, he was there when I was there. And a number of people aren't anymore. They've either retired or passed away. Yeah. But,
heard great stuff about him.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's doing D-Min there.
Okay.
Let's go tech. Let's not nerd out on
theology.
I'm actually going low tech today.
Low tech.
Low tech. There was a workshop I sat in with a guy named Jake Cranda.
Mm-hmm.
He's the online campus pastor of Saddleback Church, which had like 20,000 viewers 2 weeks ago. So it's like huge outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a workshop about online campus without using a computer or slides and all that. So I was like, oh,
interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Are you on staff at Saddleback?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
No, my day job is working on the internet domain names that end in .bible.
Oh, .bible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'll talk about that a little bit later.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
But I was thinking we could go chronologically.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a fast review of how technology has been
yeah.
a part of our humanity.
Yeah.
And then we can drill down on kind of our current era of digital technology.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be very discussion-based.
That's great.
Yeah.
Question.
Yes, Dave.
How do you feel about recording?
I'm recording here also. You're welcome to record.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm very open source.
Okay.
So
you don't mind, I'm just going to put this right
yeah.
here.
I'll share this with you too. See which one turns out better.
Yeah.
You know?
iPhone is pretty good, so.
Yeah?
iPhone sucks. Anyway, I'm sorry. Who said that?
What kind of phone is this?
iPhone 7.
Oh, 7?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. 6. What's the new one?
There's
eight.
An X.
8 and an X now. Yeah.
8 and X.
I think it's 7.
Okay, since we have an intimate group, let's go around and introduce ourselves and give us a thought about faith and technology.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll... give us some starter topics for discussion, and then we can spend the next 40 minutes or so and wrap up. So it's going to be casual. It's going to be relaxed. I think we've had way... I feel like this conference has had way too much content.
Yeah.
We haven't had time to digest. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
My name is Hanmin. I grew up in Virginia. Born in Korea, grew up in Korea, moved to Virginia, dad's pastor. Moved back when I graduated college to Korea to work. Was part of a church plant called Jubilee in Seoul. Was there as a lay member. Became a pastor, went to seminary in Seoul. Spent 10 years there serving. And this past year, November, we planted a church out of our mother church, Jubilee, called King's Cross. And 40 of us from Jubilee, myself, and we have two other pastors that are bivocational that are working with me. And we just planted a church other side of the river. I don't know if you guys know Seoul. Seoul is divided by a river. And our mother church is in south of the river. We're just north part of the river, near college campus, in a mall. So, that's me.
Great.
Technology. I love tech.
Actually, Korea has the fastest internet
in
the world.
Easily. Yeah. So, I used to love sports, and then as I don't know, I just love tech. I think if I had the money, I'll be early adapted to everything. If I had the money and my wife wasn't, you know, she'll let me do. But I love tech. And I do think churches are changing. I do think, as a planter, it really, like this whole year, because we did this for 2 years, this whole prep time, right? I thought a lot about what does it mean to be a church and what would a church look like? Because I do think with technology, everything is changing, right? Exponential growth of technology, everything is changing. And I do think church will not look the same. Even though I planted a church in a mall with, you know, PowerPoint, with drums, with lights and things like that, I think that's that was like transition that we went on for the last maybe 30, 40 years, right, from like organs to this. But I do think with technology, churches are changing. I just don't know what that would look like. It's just more than a, you know, creating a nice video or even having a nice recording of your sermon. I don't even record actually my like my video sermons. I don't think those are, people are gonna sit there and listen to a 40-minute sermon or 35-minute sermon actually, watch you. So I'm just trying to figure out what that would look like, and I want to be able to leverage technology, being in city like Seoul, people adapt very fast. So what you realize about people in Seoul is like, it takes a long time for people in the States to adjust to new technology, but in Seoul, older people adjust very quickly. So the way, the pay system, things like that change so quickly, I do think we can leverage technology to be able to do that. So, and Seoul is largely becoming unreached. So millennials, everyone that's under 30, we're no different from Japan in terms of our spiritual landscape. Less than 3% of college students regularly go to church. And all the young people I meet, you know, young as in like people that are my age, younger, they've left the church. They no longer go to church. So, and I do think technology is a great platform. Could give us a great platform. So, I'm wrestling with those questions.
Yeah.
But I'm still stuck on traditional way of doing things. So that's my answer.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm Dave. I pastor a church in New Jersey. It's called Mosaic, and my relationship to technology, I'm kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. I personally am not a lover of tech, but so I guess in terms of my church, I guess the good word would be cautious. I've been cautious with our use of technology, and just for example, people have been really pushing me about online giving and easy giving, and I have just still been really slow with that, probably slower than I need to be, and I'm still thinking through it. So on one end, institutionally with our church, a little bit cautious, and then individually, as I see sheep in our church and people in our church, kind of concerned and confused about technology and how it's affecting them. And I see addictions, and I see just, you know, the social interaction being really hurt by it, but in some ways, it's technology really augmenting things. We're able to connect with our students who go to different colleges and things like that through tech. We've been able to have Skype meetings with our missionaries, so I'm seeing some really great ways that it can be used. Also concerned. So yeah, that's kind of where I am. And I'm just trying to get a grasp of how is technology going to shape things, because it's not obvious. You would think that technology would tear down, public speaking, for example. But you see TED Talks.
Yeah.
You think maybe technology is going to get rid of books, but I actually see a lot of people reading books, and I think statistics show that it's not dying as quickly as you would think. So I'm trying to get a better grasp of where things are.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah. My name's Adam, and I'm an associate pastor at a church in the San Fernando Valley, West Hills. And Ray invited me down. I've known Ray for a long time. So this has been interesting and new for me. I haven't been to a conference like this one yet, particularly directed on faith and work. Usually you go to a conference for discipleship or a men's conference or something like that. So this has been good. I've been soaking it in. This sounded interesting to me in just thinking through even the church that I've been at. 6 years now, when I first got there, they still had a black and white copy machine, only no color. And so I've seen even this church, and I've helped as one of the leaders on staff walk through all these changes in technology, digital soundboard, changing to LED lights, even stage lighting. And so, but always trying to think through how can we use whatever it is we're going to do as a better tool for what we're doing, whatever it might be. So that's one caveat. And then in my own life, I've got three kids. My oldest is a daughter. Two boys are younger. Daughter turned 12 a few weeks ago, so she's in sixth grade this year. And so this was the first year we decided, Sadie should have a smartphone. And also helping. Gosh, now I got to even look at how do I help my daughter, who's 11, walk through learning how to use technology properly. And not get addicted to it, and learn that it's a tool, and that you don't want the technology to be the thing that changes your life. So my wife and I and my daughter, we've had some good conversations with it. Anyway, so this just sounded interesting.
Yeah, very good. And my name is DJ Chuang. I live in Aliso Viejo, so about 30 minutes south of here. I've lived here in Orange County for 10 years now. And before that, 10 years in Bethesda, Maryland. And before that, I went to undergrad at Virginia Tech when they the first year they had computer engineering as a degree. So this would be 1984, graduated in the class of 1988. And part of the reason, one of the reasons I went to Virginia Tech was they required engineers to have a personal computer. And so we were the first class that we were required to buy personal computers as a part of our education.
Wow.
And these are with floppy drives and those big analog screens and things like that. And I grew up in Winchester, Virginia. So I've seen technology, which is such a broad topic, but I think we tend to use it in terms of digital technology, mm-hmm. right? And even though we've had other technologies before that, and we'll do a quick review, the So I was introduced to technology in high school in terms of digital technology, and I gravitated towards it, and it's become a part of my life journey all the way till now. So my day job is working on internet domain names that end in .bible. The internet namespace has expanded from 22 extensions to over 1,000 in the past 3 years. So there's domains that end in .church, yeah. .media, yeah. .network, yeah. .ventures, yeah. and .bible is yeah. the one I work on. Yeah. So there's all this technical plumbing underneath the internet.
Yeah.
And so that's my day job. And then on my ministry side, I've known Ray for 26 years. We went to Dallas Theological Seminary together for a semester. And what was I gonna say? So we stayed in touch over the years. I actually worked with Ray as an associate pastor at the First Ambassador Bible Church in Northern Virginia. And that was from 97 to 2000. And we were the first couple in the church, it was a church plant, we were the first couple in the church with a child. So we started family ministry in that sense. And we were one of the very early churches that had a website. We actually had multiethnic.org, and for those of you that kind of know about domain names, shorter yeah. is better,
yeah.
and
yeah.
meaningful words are like yeah. very valuable. And then now that church is 20 years old and flourishing and running about 500, about half Asian, half non-Asian. Mm-hmm. So the multiethnic vision has really bore fruit over the years. Mm-hmm. We were one of the first churches to use one of these big suitcase video projectors and using PowerPoint as part of our worship.
It was how many years ago?
This is 97.
97, so
yeah. 20 years. So 20 years ago.
So that was like a new revolution, right? When churches went away from hymnals to
overhead projectors.
Yeah. yeah.
Was yeah, kind right. of the current technology
yeah.
at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And here's what's crazy.
Yeah.
Just last week,
yeah.
I saw a Facebook Live of a Korean American retreat conference
yeah.
using overhead projector slides
yeah. wow.
called the Oil Conference
oh,
in Chicago. I could not believe
no,
it.
No, you're kidding me.
So they're using Facebook Live on the one hand, and then
no.
they're using
Why?
Overhead projectors
Why?
On the other hand.
You could write on it.
It's so wild.
That's true, you can.
Yeah,
as long as you don't write on the glass.
Well, they have slides left over, so they want to
use. That's so crazy.
Our church
yeah.
has, I've seen two overhead projectors in cabinets on campus,
uh-huh.
yeah, probably because nobody wants to get rid of them. But they haven't used them in
yeah.
the 6 years I've been there, but they have them.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
by way of quick review, we're not going to use Google or smartphones. We're just going to
yeah.
use our memory
yeah.
about technology. So before 1900, what would you say were the most significant technologies that changed our human society?
Printing press?
Certainly.
That was a big one.
Printing press was a huge one.
Before that?
Certainly before 1900.
Were cars
yeah.
invented that before?
No.
Early
no. Cars are later.
Was it later?
Was there telegraph? Was that that early?
Telegraph was pre 1900. Yeah, yeah.
Where else was?
Well, actually, I'm not sure if cars were pre 1900 or not, but around there, maybe.
Yeah.
But people don't often describe that as a technology.
They don't.
Huh. Do they? I don't think so.
Telegraph.
Or cars.
Cars.
Modernization or industrialization.
Gotcha.
I tend to hear. Technology. Yeah. So there's a good book by John Dyer, who's at Dallas Seminary, From the Garden to the City.
Yeah.
And he described technology as going as far back to Genesis 3,
yeah,
where Adam was working the land.
Yeah.
And so the word technon is describing the art and the craft of using our hands and developing tools that are an extension of what we can do.
Mm.
Yeah. And but I also found as I researched this that the word technology didn't come into the English language until about 100 years ago.
Mm.
So that's partly why I used the 1900 as a pivoting point to just think about, well, what were the technologies before that? If you think about biblical times, having scrolls was a technology,
sure,
in that sense, and Jesus read from scrolls,
mm-hmm,
right? And then in Jesus' time, the Roman roads were a big development in human society, buildings of different kinds along the way.
Chariots were huge.
Yeah, there you go. Chariots, coliseums, boats that had the missionary journey. And then, let's see, advancing forward, anything else stand out to you?
Well, I mean,
From there to 1500?
To 1500, I'm thinking eyeglasses. They were invented by the monks. That was like a tremendous...
Clocks were invented by monks as well.
Clocks, yeah. Bible rules,
Or
later, but...
Yeah, so machinery kind of the precursor. And then as the 1900s came on, radio was invented right around 1900.
Yeah.
And so analog devices using radio tubes and wires, electricity, with the advent of electricity, then electricity was combined with machines, and that became kind of the foundation of all the technology that's come since. So after radio, you have television in black and white, and then television in color, and then broadcast, and some of the more create or open churches started using radio for radio ministries and television ministry. So there's early adopters in churches that use technology that way. And then, let's see. Oh, and then music and recorded things. You have vinyl records, and then 8-track, and tape ministry was huge for decades. Actually, this church still has a tape ministry rack in the sanctuary. So it was fascinating to just see and touch it again. And then I grew up in a time where there's card catalogs in the library, right?
Yeah.
And churches would have libraries with books, physical books, and things like that. And then I went to high school in 1980 to 1984. And I think another pivot point as we move into our current age is 1977, when personal computers were invented and made available. So I grew up with the Tandy TRS-80, and some of the other people used Commodore, and then other people used the Apple II. I'm 51 now, so I might be dating myself. And then 1984 came along, Apple Macintosh comes on the scene, and that was a leap forward for personal computing. And then in my high school years, I'm learning how to program using a personal computer at home, using a modem where I could call up another computer with a modem and exchange files and have interaction that way. And then in college was when they invented the hard drive.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, email started becoming available. And then by seminary, email was common through CompuServe, AOL, and Prodigy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then online shopping started coming online. And then the internet kind of became mainstream in 1995 or so, 1997, and websites started coming online. And then...
was that just through AOL that was mainstream?
AOL is the main network.
Yeah.
And you still have to use modems
to log into
the internet.
Yeah.
And fax machines, kind of, analog part of that. And then, let's see.
97.
So at that time, fax became a distribution channel for church leaders to exchange information in a rapid pace, because websites haven't caught up in terms of being a publishing channel. That came a little later. People are still thinking print-based. And then, let's see. Any of you recall the technologies around that time that you used?
Wasn't there MP3 players?
Still CD players
at
that. Yeah,
CDs, that's right, CDs came along.
Yeah, prior to that you had all your VCRs and Betamax and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, VHS.
Tape-based, right?
Yeah, VHS.
Yeah. I remember buying this MP3 player for like $250, and you could put in six songs. It took 45 minutes to put those songs.
That's right, 45 minutes. So CDs became a carrier of sermons.
Yeah, sure.
Right, and then actually Ambassador Church, we cut our own CD. We did a worship song set, and recorded our own CD.
Wow.
So we were before Hillsong, and yeah. So CDs were around for a while, and then churches used videotapes for curriculums.
Sure.
So the publishing world started using videotapes to provide Christian teaching, and let's see. So internet comes online. The internet speed went from modems to DSL, and then went to cable, and then now it's become. And then the next transition, I would say, going from wired to wireless. And then as things went wireless, the smartphone is another huge leap forward.
Yeah.
So internet speed is common, we go wireless, and now it's ubiquitous. Like, kids are growing up in a world that's always had the internet. Kids as young as 1 and 2 and 3, they intuitively understand how to swipe a screen. And ministries, in terms of churches, they're exploring, well, what's the church relationship to technology? That's still a huge question.
Yeah.
And as huge and as common as technology is in our everyday life, churches are still thinking, kind of thinking about what to do or what not to do, playing mostly as a cautious role. So in some ways, churches tend to be conservative, tend to be slow on adopting technology.
And
we don't have to be, but for whatever reason, we are. And even though technology is so much of a part of life, there hasn't been a concerted effort to have conferences or to develop resources and to really work on the questions that we all have about what's the relationship between church and technology, what's the relationship of faith and technology, humanity and technology. So there's a handful of books.
There are no conferences in North America about technology and faith, things like that.
Not one that's consistent every year.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. There was a computing magazine that was for Christians, but that lasted for a couple, 5 or 10 years, pre-internet.
Yeah.
And the post-internet,
yeah.
Not really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm not sure what that says about our situation. So we wind up with all these questions, and we don't have people working on it. And I think one reason for that, technology is developing so fast.
Yeah.
The technology that you have in your pocket, the smartphone and your laptop that you bought today in the store will not be in the store in 2 years.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay. And the thing about law and the thing about academics, those take more time to reflect and study, yeah. and technology's going faster than that.
Yeah.
So academic and yeah. thinking through things
yeah.
can't keep up.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. So that's where we're at. So my experience with churches, so I'll mention a couple things and then we'll just chat. For 3.5 years, I worked at Leadership Network, which is described as a think tank and a church network that has helped cultivate mega churches and multi-site churches, mm-hmm. looking for innovations in the church and pouring gasoline on it. And one of my research projects was identifying churches that were developing internet campuses and yeah. online campuses by intentionally hosting a worship service online.
Yeah. yeah.
And I saw that grow from 5 to 105 in about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And now there's probably over 1,000.
Yeah.
They don't self-identify onto my directory because it costs them to put out bandwidth. Maybe. So churches have started doing that. Yeah. Some have even allowed, they have to think through all kinds of issues, like
yeah.
is online baptism yeah. allowed?
Yeah.
Is membership allowed? Yeah. You know, how far do you go with all that? And so there's some churches that have gone as far as that, having membership online and having baptism, communion.
Yeah.
They've even, there's churches that have found a means to do that through technology. Whereas the average church tends to use like back in the television days, churches would have their worship service streamed onto cable TV in their local community.
Yeah.
Now they stream their service in real time on Facebook Live or on their site.
Yeah.
That's pretty becoming more common. The second thing that's becoming common is just recording sermon.
Yeah.
And using the internet as a distribution channel, whether for audio or video.
Yeah.
So your tape ministry and your CDs
yeah.
are gone.
Yeah.
All you need is a smartphone
yeah.
to access it. Yeah. But the results speak for themselves in that sense.
Yeah.
Churches that are doing internet campuses, they have full-time people on staff, and it's self-sustaining because it costs less to do a virtual campus than a physical brick and mortar.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then people can have interaction beyond just the 1 hour a week on a weekend.
What's the nature, like what kind of interaction?
They have online groups.
Mm.
They can have, whether it's a Facebook group where they have conversations throughout the week, or they can actually hold events, like having a small group during a set hour each week, and people all log in. And
got you.
So yeah. can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So I'm really, that's very foreign to me, but so you've studied these, you know, you've met, so what is your assessment of online worship and things like that? Because for me, as a guy who's naturally conservative, is there must be something essential lost, but are you seeing that not really? What are you seeing? In online worship, online communion, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. I'm personally okay with any means the gospel can go out can be acceptable.
Yeah.
But I also believe every church has to wrestle and think through their own philosophy of ministry, of what they have convictions for on what's our way of doing ministry versus what's just not how we do it when it comes to whether it's on the ground or online, it's similar in that sense.
As a means and channel to get evangelization going and the gospel out, I'm all for it. But in terms of worship, that's where I struggle. I would like the gospel to go get out in any medium possible.
Okay.
But in terms of communal worship, in terms of gathered worship, is that gathered worship? What are the essentials of being gathered?
Mm-hmm.
Can you be gathered digitally? What do you think about that?
I think some people can. Some people, digital natives is kind of a term for people that naturally are naturally comfortable in the online world, and they actually have relationships that are more meaningful online than in person. And they're the next generation, their kids that see no distinction between online and offline. It's all part of their reality.
Like, yeah. Like I have a friend who's church planted in Seoul, and they have a 2 o'clock service, a 4 o'clock service, bunch of college kids. And I don't like video sermons, so I asked them. And my friend told me these young guys prefer video sermons because of their relationship with their screens.
Hmm.
It's more comfortable, which is not a good thing or a bad thing, it's just an observation. What they observed was, our generation, I think we're in a funky place where we're not digital natives, but we're not,
right.
You know, we're not foreigners, but younger people are very comfortable, you know, because they're having meetings, Skype meetings, they're having constant discussion, they're doing almost everything online. That was interesting. I thought, what?
Mm-hmm.
They would prefer screen over live preaching?
Well, but that's the only thing I was going to mention too. It might also have the caveat of whether it's live or rerun, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I talk to my friends. To me, this is a phone.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
My daughter FaceTimes her friends.
Mm-hmm.
And to her, and I mean FaceTimes her friends, like the phone's there in the bathroom, the phone's there at
dinner,
the phone's, you know, we try, but it's a live connection.
Yeah.
She doesn't watch a recording of her friends.
Yeah.
She can't interact with that.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a part too. If it's live, then they're still interacting versus if it's a pre-recorded something, that might be different. I don't know.
Well, it's one way interacting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are churches that actually record the way they record the sermon. They do it in such a unique way. It's not, they do it with intention of playing it for an audience that will be, you know, like a church in Venture Church in SF. They want to do this church in a box idea where the way they record is, they want to create these micro churches where 1 to 100 people, and the way they record the sermon is so that they know that people are going to be watching this, and it's the way they record is like this effect of being there, actually being at the place. And so I'm like, wow, this is really,
yeah,
interesting.
It's different.
So I'll mention two more things that,
yeah,
I've been part of developing. So as these online churches came online, I created a podcast called Social Media Church. Yeah, and that's the web address now, socialmedia.church.
Okay.
And for the past 4 years, for the past 4 years, the podcast has been running. The first 2 years, I tapped my network and just interviewed people all around the country about how they were using social media as part of their church.
Yeah.
And the last 2 years, I handed off to some new co-hosts that they've been continued to run that podcast. But there's a whole knowledge base of just hearing what people's philosophy,
yeah, yeah,
of social media and,
yeah,
online campus and so on is,
yeah,
is captured, and,
yeah,
there's knowledge. So I found podcasting to be a great way to just create knowledge,
yeah,
very quickly,
yeah,
without going through the hoops of,
yeah,
publishing,
yeah,
which,
yeah,
is, which is an 18-month process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way too slow.
Yeah.
And the second thing with .Bible, I've been working on that project for 4 years.
Okay.
So the internet namespace has expanded,
yeah,
and internet domain names and web addresses are becoming part of our branding,
yeah,
and it's becoming a part of our personal identity. And with the virtualization of more and more things, it may soon become the address of devices, whether it's a device of the car or your Nest AC or heating unit or access to doors or your phone. And so internet is beginning to take on a very specific role through web addresses.
Mm.
And churches haven't gotten to the point where,
yeah,
they're using that strategically,
yeah,
but because,
yeah,
they still see website, app, and online giving as kind of the main things that they do. But coming down the road, there's all kinds of possibilities. So that's where we're at. In terms of, Adam, you raised some questions about parenting. So one of the best book that just came out last July is by Andy Crouch, the Tech Wise Family.
Oh, okay.
It really does a great job of thinking through what is our relationship with technology, and introduces the concept of electronic Sabbath and putting technology in the right place, putting it aside when you have family dinners and certain events, so that it isn't a constant part of your life, and that you control the technology doesn't control you. In terms of online giving, I go to a church called Saddleback Church, which is fairly large, about 20,000 on a weekend with 19 locations. I've heard as recently as last year, their total giving, about 40% comes in online now.
Wow.
And that number is going to continue to grow. So the trend is that more and more people are comfortable with a cashless society. Even our phones have a Apple Pay or Samsung Pay to pay without anything physical is becoming the norm. There's the next generation. I have a 20-year-old son, so they don't even know how to write a check.
So you still write checks?
Really?
North America, people check. You still write checks?
I know.
Because I think Korea it's all cell phone, right?
We don't.
So even as church plan, what they tell you is pass the basket, right? Everyone's saying pass the basket, pass the basket. I told our team we're not gonna pass the basket going forward, because what I realized was people don't carry cash. So I don't want to offend newcomers, and I don't want that them to feel like we're collecting money. But what I realize is don't pass the basket. Just take that opportunity to let people know why people should give, and just give. And we have online giving. Just point them there. And I think I realized people don't carry cash. It's like
so that changes the offering time.
No, what we do is we respond. We make it a response. So after sermon, we do communion. Every week we do communion. And we have baskets. Right now we pass the basket, but this is what I've been thinking about. We'll have boxes around communion tables. If people want to give, people want to give. But we won't pass the basket. What we'll say is, here, if you're new, you don't have to give. We have people that have committed to seeing this church grow. We're asked, because they give faithfully. If you want to give, we have a giving site.
Mm-hmm. And there's some other creative ways to incorporate the act of giving during worship. So I've seen churches that put a screen up, you can give right now through texting,
because
everybody has a cell phone in that sense, so you can respond immediately and give that way. And then during that time, you can either have a worship song or a giving testimony, and so you actually create time and space for people to text in or use their app to give. So
DJ, have you found that there are certain things that you can do digitally, somebody sitting at home and worshiping with
people?
Are there other things that you feel like it can't be done because the essence of it is being lost? Are you seeing anything like that?
Well, I think where there's one definite line that cannot be done is touch and smell. Because you have sound, you have sight that's replicated online. What are our five senses? Touch, smell, and then
hearing.
Well,
sound.
Yeah, we have sound and sight.
Oh, that's sound. Oh, yeah.
Right. What's our fifth sense? Sorry.
Taste.
Yes.
Taste. Okay, so there's three out of five that cannot be duplicated.
Right. And that's communion.
Right, in the literal sense, yeah. But for churches that mediate it through an online thing, they'll either mail a communion thing that comes from the same source, or they just say it's more about the symbolic act of communion. So just find some crackers and find some milk in your refrigerator and share that time, partake.
That's really tough for me.
Yeah.
Well, and even the offering line, I know people at our church, their whole idea is we're told to bring an offering. Don't mail your check in to the office during the week. Bring it on Sunday. And it's an older way of looking at it.
Sure.
It might just be worth those conversations over time,
just
to help people understand. Well, nobody wrote checks in Jesus' time.
You
know
what
I mean? So,
right.
So even what we do or are used to is vastly different from 100 years ago.
But I guess my So my concern and caution is, you know, in some ways, the medium is the message or like that. So I think it's difficult if we just look at it as chronology. This old way of doing things, here's the new way of doing things, right? But when we look at it as essentials, for me, essential to communion is the people, and it's the touch and the smell of the wine, and it is watching, you know, the crumbs fall in front of you. But now I'm asking myself, okay, is that really essential? What are the essentials of communion? Is it the taste? And if it's saying, go get milk, and for me, it's no, it can't be milk. It must be fruit of a grape. Now, is that me being conservative Westminster, or, you know, kind of backwater? Am I fighting for essentials? Those are the things I'm thinking through.
Well, you need to develop your convictions, so I encourage you to do that.
And I don't necessarily mean old way versus new way. It could just be different way. Our church just went through, and is still going through, senior pastor of 33 years, retired this year. New pastor started in November. He's been there about 2 months. People are always asking me, hey, you've been here 6 years. How are things going? You know, I said, one of my favorite words is different. It's not a good, bad. It's for everybody in every way.
Yeah.
In any way you look at it, there's just different. You know, so that's just maybe one way of thinking about it. Again, it's not, I don't ever want to be, well, John never did that, you know, and it could be that same way. But I hear you as well. But I also remember you're talking about it's got to be the fruit of a grape, right? But what about unleavened bread versus all the churches that use regular loaves of bread? It's like, but like you said, you've got to come up with your own
conviction
for what's going to be, you know, good for you and your congregation.
So in terms of worship gathering, you'll probably lean towards being physically in the same room because of the incarnation and because of embodiment, because we're physical beings. And that's one way to form your conviction around that. But then does that mean you would not allow overflow rooms? Because then it's mediated through video.
Right.
Or would you not allow multiple locations as a multi-site if the preaching is still done in one location but video fed to another? So I go to Saddleback Church, the teaching and preaching happens at Lake Forest, one campus, and it's videoed out to all the
live
others. Sometimes live, sometimes pre-recorded. But
Lord,
it's all video.
Say no.
It's all video, right? So some churches say yes, some churches say no. And you have to develop your conviction on that.
One thing that challenges me is, even in the first century, because certain church members were incarcerated, deacons would bring the communion to that person. So that challenges me because, okay, well, there's something close to, you know, mailing a communion to somebody who's, and this question has been in, you know, before technology, the technology issues, because people were, you know, bedridden or something like that.
Yes.
In a diaconal sense, there were always concerns about this.
We just had a conversation over lunch on Wednesday, the new pastor, myself, and three guys from church, about that very issue. You know, does Kendrick know, our new pastor, he's only here 2 months, about the few people we have that are homebound, and how can we serve them communion? I mean, you know, just on Wednesday we had that conversation, and so,
Tell us about Korea.
What about Korea?
Because Korea is such fast adopting with technology. How is technology affecting the church? Besides, online giving.
I'm very honest, I think churches are, they're not intentionally, I don't think a lot of churches are intentional with technology, whether they're conservative or they're all about it. I think it's, Korea itself, it's changing very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's very harmful for a lot of reasons, technology, the way technology is used. The gaming industry, it's a billion-dollar industry in Korea. No one's reading books, everyone's playing games. When you go out, you go to a restaurant, everyone's on their phone. No one's talking to each other. That's home, that's every kid, you're out in the restaurant, they're watching the screen the whole time. There's a lot of issues that that I don't even know how people are dealing with technology. It's just because people test technology all the time, need technology all the time. So now restaurants don't even, I go to McDonald's and I don't have human interaction.
Oh, there's a kiosk.
It's a kiosk.
Yep.
Bunch of them. Like, I go to McDonald's and Starbucks in Korea. I don't think you guys do silent orders here. Silent orders on your
mobile,
app?
Yeah, mobile.
Mobile orders.
Yeah.
So in Korea, I had that forever. So people don't even like talk to each other. It's just I put in my order. So it's.
I mean, we already see.
Yeah.
It's affecting social skills.
Yeah. Oh yeah, social skills. Like, youth kids. Like I was a youth pastor maybe 5 years ago, and I noticed then like boys, especially boys, they don't know how to have any small talk.
Right.
They, you know, it's really really interesting how. So when you see a kid who's articulate, it's actually really refreshing. It's like, you know, where are you from? So I did, and in terms of like technology, church, I think we're way behind. You know? And I just don't know if we're intentional enough. Like you said, there's nothing going on here. There's nothing going on creative about technology. I think people are just concerned about having a nice video sermon, some nice website, good-looking website.
To drive people to the physical
event. Yeah, but it's not intentional. It's just all other churches have it. I think that's how a lot of churches do. Other churches have it. They don't even think. I don't even think we think about why do we have video sermons.
Mm-hmm.
We say, "Oh, that's just have it." Like my staff challenged me, like, "Simon, why do you want video sermons?" I'm thinking, you know, I don't need a video sermon. Like, I don't think we've ever thought about that because I think the pace is very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Other places have it. We almost feel like, "Oh, other churches have pews. We should have pews. Other churches have this. We should have this."
Mm-hmm.
And so,
but somebody's driving that.
Somebody's driving that, but they I think people had good intentions maybe, you know, when they created that. But I think, you know, maybe that was created in early 2000, and it's 2017, and we're trying to do the same thing. But when you look at it, you realize, like sermons, right? Like video sermons. I don't think anyone under 30, not anyone, but very small percentage will sit there, no matter how great you are. You can be Tim Keller. Very few people will sit there and watch a whole sermon.
Right.
Right?
But at the same time, what I'm seeing is but podcasts are more
popular.
They'll listen to
That's right,
Oh, an audio. Yeah,
which is why at our church,
we
don't have video sermons, but we were very intentional about putting up the audio sermon.
Definitely, I agree. So audio sermons make more sense instead of having video.
Mm-hmm.
We have audio sermons. But another thing is I had a friend, and he said he doesn't actually do any audio sermons because it's giving people opportunity to miss church.
Mm-hmm.
So he realized, as he was, you know, pumping out audio sermons, his people were, you know, because the average Americans, I think it's every other Sunday now, right?
Two times a month.
Right.
That's happening in Korea. And and people are like, oh, I listened to your sermon. So he got so frustrated, he stopped putting out sermons, and he realized, like, people are at church.
Mm-hmm.
So there's you know, so it's interesting. It's this, we don't realize. I think we're going so fast trying to catch up with technology, we don't realize the implication for our context, for our time, for our city, and we need help. I feel like I need help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We make a lot of decisions because we're forced to make decisions. And people would tell us, like, you gotta have a good website, you gotta have this, you gotta have that, but we're thinking, you know, can we focus on one thing and do it well? And instead of what everyone has, can we do one thing well and continue to advance? Like, I think there's one church in Oklahoma called Life Church.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they created this Bible app.
Yes.
Out of Oklahoma.
That's
right.
It's not Silicon Valley. It's not New York.
It's not Silicon
Valley. Yeah.
And they created this Bible app. And it's brilliant. I'm like, that's amazing.
There's just the
Bible app U-Version.
U-Version, right, yeah.
That's from Life Church.
One local church. You know,
everybody
LifeChurch.tv.
Everyone uses it.
I've got it on here, yeah.
But they decided, hey, let's try. They fell into this, but they thought out of the box. They were like, you know, every church has this, every church has that, but what can we really focus on? What can we use? I know that was brilliant. I thought, but you know, that's hard. That's like, you know.
Well, they have a culture of innovation. So.
That's right.
So they're okay experimenting.
They're intentional about their
stuff.
And they
fund, the church funds
that's
the Bible
app.
They don't take donations or anything.
Right.
Right.
It's free, totally free.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I saw an estimate that it's worth over $20
million. Wow.
Or actually, they've invested over $20 million over the years to develop that.
Oh, it's definitely wonderful source.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're a partner of ours at .Bible, so they have free .Bible as the quickest web address, easy to remember, to share the Bible app.
That's
free. Free.Bible. Yeah.
Free.Bible.
Yeah. You can remember that, right? Yeah. So,
but I really like their culture because they are intentional. They made a lot of mistakes. They failed a lot of things, but they were intentional about creating something that people can actually use.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just following the trend.
And actually, the root of the story is accidental.
That's right.
So the innovation came out of an accident because Bobby Grunewald was in an airport and that he was looking for something found that.
In some ways, the conversation is not that new because even in planting churches, people are always saying, hey, this works. It reaches people. And then the conservatives, kind of like me, are kind of, okay, it may work, but is it right?
It's a similar conversation
with technology, but it's just so much faster that once you're done with one conversation, there are three more in the pipeline.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the struggle for me.
And when we talk about ethics, like technology, when in 20 years, we might not have human interaction. Are we gonna evangelize robots, AI? We haven't had these conversations. You know, I have a buddy who runs basically Korean Amazon called Coupang. He's the guy who started Coupang. And we're having this conversation. We just had dinner, we're just talking about technology, and he's telling me this stuff that I never thought about. It's like we're gonna have AIs in our houses.
Mm-hmm.
And are we gonna evangelize? Are we gonna have churches for AIs? Are we gonna
Well, actually, there's a couple science fiction shows now. There's one called Westworld, where they have androids that are part of an amusement park with a Western setting, and people go there to entertain themselves by being cowboys and shooting things up and interacting with androids that are robots.
Because the idea is that the digital world and our world, it's going to collide, and it's going to... There's gonna come a time where, what was he talking about? Some of the Silicon Valley CEOs are investing money and researching how they could actually defeat death, death.
Yeah.
These are crazy things that.
Because the assumption is technology can solve all our problems.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right.
It's.
I think that was mentioned by.
Yeah.
One of the speakers.
And I'm thinking, we don't address any of this stuff at church. Like me as a preacher, I don't address any of this ethics about technology, you know. I have no idea. Like I'm like blown away by what I'm learning.
But at the same time, in some ways, nobody can create that except us in some ways.
Yeah.
Because ethicists are not going to work that out for us either because of the biblical implications. There's always going to be a different color to that. So in some ways, we have to think about it because no one's going to do our homework for us.
Yeah.
We have to think it through.
Yeah.
So even the language of the church is behind, I'm not really comfortable with that because we shouldn't be about keeping up.
Yeah.
You know, we have to think about the ethics, like you said.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to do that homework for us. So the primary concern is not about keeping up, I think.
Yeah.
So
what will be the language if it's not keeping up? What will be the language?
Thinking through or stewarding.
Discerning is a good word. So as technologies come online, we have to do the work of discerning what's happening in our culture.
Yeah.
Is that appropriate for the church, and how do we engage that culture?
And the other
that
side,
cultural
how
artifact.
How do we leverage also? Because it's a tool.
Right.
Yes. And that's the idea behind who is it we're trying to reach.
Yeah.
If that's what we're looking at.
Yeah.
And in order for us to reach those people, if it's younger people, millennials.
Yeah. I'll close with these two thoughts since we're or at our time, and then we'll continue to talk.
Yeah.
Are you staying for dinner?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So technology, they say, is neutral, but I don't think so because people aren't neutral.
Yeah.
So as we interact with technology, it does something to us and vice versa. And the second thing is, I think the church has the corner on helping people know and experience what it means to be truly human.
Mm.
And that's a yearning everybody has.
Mm.
And we can point people to the God who created us, and he shows us how to be fully human.
Amen.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay, let me close in prayer and we'll go. Thanks for this time together. We're so glad that we can have these conversations and have some conversation partners. Pray that you would give us the discernment through your Holy Spirit on how to use the tools that you provide in our culture today. to further the gospel and help our cities and our people to flourish. In Jesus' name, amen.
So this dot Bible,
yes.